Okay, we're starting on Kuf Aleph Amud Bet, new Perek. Hanoseh et Haisha, gets married to a woman, and while he's, when they're making the marriage arrangements, Patska imo kedei sheyazun et bita chamesh shanim. He commits to her, obviously, right? She makes a deal with him. She says, listen, I'll marry you, but please commit to the fact that I want you to support my daughter from another marriage. She had a daughter from a previous marriage. I want you to support her for 5 years, mizonot. So chayav lizonah l'chamesh shanim. Okay, he has to commit to 5 years. But now we're going to see all sorts of situations. Niseit la'acher u'paskayim o'kadei she'ezun u'bita chamesh shanim. Chayav lizonah chamesh shanim. What if she gets divorced from him and then she goes and marries somebody else? Okay? And then it's still during the 5 years. And she gets that guy to commit that he's going to support her for 5 years. So what happens? Do they both have to support her? Yes. Chayav lezonah chamesh shanim. The second guy, what's the story? He made a commitment, and neither knew about the other's commitment. But it's not that in the end we're worried about mizonot for this girl. In the end, it has to do with what commitment each guy made. Each guy made a commitment for 5 years. So even if they overlap, you have to still support her. Lo yomar harishon lechishe tavo etzli azuna. He can't say, well, look, if you live with me, if the girl lives with me, I'll support her, and if not. Ela molich la mizonotel lemakom she'ima. Okay, he brings the mizonot to wherever the mother is. Here there's an assumption that the girls go with the mother. Okay? There's a whole debate about this, or why this is. Is it because of new reasons and not appropriate for her to be with all the Yorshim, or does it have to do with the assumption the mother's going to take better care of her? Okay. So now, v'chein lo yomru shnehen. They can't both say, harei anu zanimota ke'echad. We'll each give half the mizonot, right? The guys realize that she's kind of done this, and they get together and they say, why don't we just split it? Ela echad zana ve'echad noten la demei mizonot. Now we have a separate problem, which is, she doesn't need twice the amount of food. She's not going to eat double the amount, right? Assuming that they're supporting her in a normal way, right? She doesn't need to eat double that. So one gives her mizonot, and the other gives her money in place of the mizonot, because he made a financial commitment. So he won't give it in the form of food. He'll give it in the form of money. Nisei tabal, noten la mizonot, vehe notnim la demei mizonot. Sorry. I didn't read this right. Niseit, if she gets married, now the daughter gets married, so habal noten la mizonot, her husband will now provide her with the food, vehem notenin la demei mizonot, and then both other fathers who committed to giving her the food now have to give her demei mizonot. Okay, so she could, in theory, get three times mizonot, okay? But again, one in the form of mizonot, the other two in the form of demi.
This goes against everything that we think of in terms of mizonos, and it's more like a star.
Well, this is where he's, in other words, this is not regular mizonot, right? But he commits,
like she,
this is contract. She, exactly. It's a contract that she made with him. It's not regular de mizonot, it's a contract. She made a contract, they each committed to give her mizonot, so it doesn't matter if she already has mizonot from somewhere else,
which is why
she gets the mizonot.
She's here because he would have thought mizonot.
Right.
And it's really a financial commitment more than a food commitment.
Exactly. It's a financial commitment. That's the point here. That this is all a financial commitment that he's committing to her. Okay. Meitu, what if the fathers died? So, b'notehen nizonot mi'nechasim b'nei chorin. Here's a great one. Okay. If the father dies. Now, his daughters, remember we learned, regular de mizonot, right? The daughters can get the money from the estate from mizonot, but they only get it from nechasim b'nei chorin, only if there's free available money. If there's no nechasim b'nei chorin, daughters don't get mizonot. But this one, who the mother made him commit to some daughter from some other marriage who doesn't even belong to him, ends up in a stronger position. She gets minechasim mishuabadim, mipnei shehi keba'alat chov. She is like, okay, now she's not exactly a Baal Chov, but they say she's like a Baal Chov, okay, because she has a shtar mizonot. And let's remember, the other girls don't really have a separate shtar mizonot. Here, this woman got a special shtar that says you can get mizonot. Now, we're going to have a whole discussion with Gemara. What kind of shtar was this? Was it a shtar with Edim signed on it? Was it a shtar where there were no Edim signed on it? Because if there was a shtar with Edim signed on it, there'd even be no discussion here. So in the end, they're going to say it was a shtar without Edim signatures on it. And that must be what the Mishnah is talking about. Yeah.
In theory, could the daughters, ask him, could he commit to the daughter something like that, which would then affect which kind of property they could be fed from?
He can't commit to them before they're born. That's the difference. No, they're not in existence
if
at the marriage.
His daughter's shame to him. No.
Oh, later on, could he commit to that?
And there's
that's
not
a good
enough
question.
Unencumbered property.
Uh-huh.
Could they go to him and say, we want you to commit to...
That's a good question. I wonder.
The estate
I'm
to
not
provide
so
him
sure.
Or not.
I'm not so sure that that's right. I don't know. That's a good question. I doubt it because then... Well, oh, wait, but no. In other words, I know. If at that point he has no property, well, then it doesn't matter. They can't demand from the Chasim Shu'abadim. They can only demand from the Chasim Shu'abadim from the time the contract was done. If he's got no property anymore, then there's no Chasim Shu'abadim. That's right at the time of the marriage, right? Let's say here's the marriage. Right, so at the marriage, he can't commit to daughters that aren't in existence yet, right? Now we're talking about he's committing to some daughter, right, from a previous marriage. And therefore, right, from an earlier marriage. Now therefore, she can demand from any of the karka that he sold from that point on. If he's lying on his deathbed and he has no karka, it doesn't make a difference if he commits to his daughter's mizonah because he's got no karka anymore. It can't go retroactively on, that's the whole thing of nechasim shu'abadim. It's unfair then to the people who bought the property years ago. Right, then they
right.
There's no lien
on
the property.
He wasn't on his deathbed necessarily, but at some point before he
so
dies.
So maybe at some point before he dies, in theory, but that, right, and then that would make sense. And then anyone who buys the property knows that the daughters might demand. I got to imagine he can do such a thing, but again, it can only affect property from then.
Right.
Okay. Hapikachim. Okay, if they were smart, what would they do? Hayu kotvim al menat sha'azunit bicha chamesh shanim kol zman sha'ati mi. Okay, if they were smart, they would commit to this only as long as you're living with me, the woman, right? So that he doesn't get himself into the sticky situation that they describe in the Mishnah, where he's paying and someone else is paying and maybe even a third person paying. Okay, Itzbar. Now we're going to see. Ha'omer l'chaviro, chayav ani l'cha maneh. If somebody says to his friend, I owe you 100 shekel, this is a very interesting case. Okay, it comes up in Sanhedrin. Rabbi Yochanan amar chayav, Rish Lakish amar patur. If I walk on the street and I say to you, I owe you 100 shekel, do I really owe you 100 shekel? According to Rabbi Yochanan, yes. According to Rish Lakish, no. Do you know why?
Because there's no witness.
No witness to what? To the loan, right? We only have my word. Now, what's wrong with my word? I could be saying I owe you 100 shekel for one of two reasons. In other words, I could one of three reasons. One is I really owe you the money, okay? But there's two other possibilities. One is that I could say tomorrow, oh, m'shateh ayiti b'cha. I was just joking around. Like, oh yeah, I owe you 100 shekel. Stop, okay? Could be I'm just joking. I wasn't serious. Or it could be there's
amigo?
This concept. What?
Is it amigo? Like, if he's
amigo? No, it's not amigo. It's just... a statement that has no basis in any, there's no shtar, there's no witnesses, there's nothing. And then it's just my word. And the question is, I mean, I guess you're saying it's migo, like, we believe, but here it's, migo is we believe what he's saying because he could have said something different.
He couldn't have said anything.
Here, we don't believe him. In other words, he just said stum. In other words, he says something that we say, oh, we don't really believe that because he could have not been serious. So one reason he could have not been serious is he was just joking around. Like, maybe you said, oh, you owe me money. I'm like, yeah, yeah, sure. I owe you money. Okay? Now, sure I owe you money can mean sure I owe you money, or it can mean sure I owe you money. I don't really owe you money. Okay? So the guy could say I was just joking around. Another interpretation is that people like to make themselves look, what is it that they want to make themselves look like they have loans out because they don't want other people to think that they have money and is going to come to them to start borrowing money. So if he says, I owe you money in front of some people, he's saying it so that other people think that he's got loans out and they won't bother him for money. Okay? So since there's different reasons we could say this, now there's a really interesting, I love this stuff, so I'm going to say it anyway, even though we have a lot of time, but I found this really interesting. The sugya there discusses, what if the next day, they come and, you know, Adim happened to have seen what happened, this discussion. Not that they, you know, there's a difference we're going to see in a minute. If let's say I want to say I owe you 100 shekel and I ask two of you to come be my witnesses And then I say to the person, I owe 100 shekel. That's a different story. But if two witnesses, they say, were like standing behind the bushes and happened to hear what I was saying, okay, not that I asked them, and tomorrow they come and they say, the guy, you know, who I said I owed money to, brings these two witnesses and says, you said this. And I say, I don't know what you're talking about. I never said it. Now, one option is I say, oh, yeah, I said it, but I didn't mean it. And then we basically believe me. If I say, never happened, there's a machloket. Some people say, if I remember, there's a machloket about it. I remember one opinion for sure. So one opinion, I assume, says, you know, I must be lying because I'm saying, you know, there was no such thing. Some people say, no, people don't remember stam things that they say. As people only remember things that have significance. If I was just joking around and I said, oh, yeah, sure, I don't necessarily remember that. So if Adim happened to have seen it and say, and I say, lo hayu dvarim me'olam, that never happened, we can still believe me that I was joking around because the assumption is I wouldn't have remembered such an insignificant event. Yeah, we did see it before. Yes, I don't remember what context, but we definitely saw it before.
What is the context of this Gemara?
Okay, so you'll see. So now they're saying, if you say to your friend, I owe you 100, Rabbi Yochanan says, chayav, Rish Lakish says, patur. So now they say, hechidami. What would be the case here? Ida amar lehu atemei dai, if I, you know, the guy specifically asked witnesses to come watch him say, I owe you money. So my time is Rish Lakish to kapatar, right? There's no reason Rish Lakish would say patur if I bring Adim and they hear me say, I owe you 100 shekel. Obviously, I meant it seriously. Ida lomar lehu atemei dai, and if they didn't say, if he didn't ask witnesses to come, my time is Rabbi Yochanan to come chayev, right? Because he could have said, Meshatei to b'chayev, I didn't really mean it. So la'olam, to lo ka'amar lehu atem edai, it must be that he didn't invite witnesses. V'hacha b'maya skinan, da'amar le, chayav ani lecha maneh b'shtar. He said to him, I owe you a maneh, and he had Adim, he brought out a shtar that said, that Adim said, we are witnesses that this guy owes money. Now there weren't witnesses to the, it's not a shtar that he wrote a shtar, I owe you, okay? It's a shtar that people say that we were witnesses to the fact that this guy lent him money, but they didn't sign the shtar. There's no signatures on the shtar. So Rabbi Yochanan amar chayav, alima milta deshtara, kimanda amar lehu atem edai. If we have a shtar ra'ayah, a shtar that proves it, right, then that's just as good as having witnesses. Rish Lakish amar patur, lo alima milta deshtara. He says, a shtar written down is not enough. Okay? Right. The shtar here, okay. The shtar is like this. He, let's say I'm the person who borrowed the money. I say, I owe you money. And I write a shtar that says I owe you, but there's no witnesses on it. That's what kind of shtar we're talking about. Okay? It's like an IOU, but without witnesses. And there's witnesses, I think, that saw him pass the shtar. Is that the case?
Yeah.
I think that, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now, so we have witnesses that saw him pass the shtar, but we don't have witnesses on the document. So do we say that that's enough or not? That's the machloket. So now, what do they want to do? They want to bring a proof from our Mishnah. You said, what's this doing here? A proof from our Mishnah to Rabbi Yochanan, who says he's chayav. Why? Tnan hanoseet haisha. My love, Kia Gavna. Is it not that this is the case? And I told you this when we were learning the Mishnah, that they're going to be making the case that there was a shtar, that he wrote some sort of a document, but the assumption is there were no edim on this document. Okay? So, is that not the case of our Mishnah? And therefore, what do you see? He is chayav. He is committed. So, therefore, it's no different from this case, and therefore it's proof for Rabbi Yochanan, who said chayav in the other case. So then they answer, no. In the case of our Mishnah, it was b'shtari psikta. You know what we call the tanaim, right? We have a ceremony of tanaim at the wedding, right? It's generally actually not so nahug in Israel, and if people do it, sometimes they do it at the engagement party. In America, it's generally more nahug to do it right before the ceremony. I didn't have a chance to look this up, but I read that there's a whole machloket here about the... Here, we'll see in a minute. But here, we'll see in 1 second, okay? Ukid Rav Gidol, da Amar Rav Gidol Amarav. Kama ata noten lebincha, okay? What one, right, each parent now says to the other parent of the bride and groom, how much are you giving for your son, right? The bride's parents say. And then they answer, kach v'kach. And then the other side says, v'kama ata noten lebitcha, and what are you putting into the marriage, right? Kach v'kach. Amduva kidshu, if they did a kiddushin right then, okay, kanu. This kinyan is a good kinyan, meaning that if you have a shtar between, right, the tinaim is a specific thing, that even without having edim sign on the tinaim, it's still a good kinyan. Okay? Now, according to this, if you look at the Lashon, it says, Amdu v'kidshu. If they right then and there got up and did the kiddushin, then it's good. Which makes me, and some of the mafreshim say, it doesn't have to be right then and there. Amdu v'kidshu means even if they did it later on, a few months later. Okay? So it could be, I was thinking that maybe that machloket is what is the basis for whether you do it at the mamash right before the kiddushin, or some people who do it earlier, and it could be based on this understanding of this Gemara. To me, it seemed like that was Pashut, but I didn't really get to look it up and see if that's really the case.
I don't understand what the process is. Amduva kidshu because in kiddushin there's a kinyan.
The kiddushin kind of, because they do the kiddushin after, it makes whatever was discussed kinyan, earlier as if there was a kinyan to it.
But if the kiddushin itself is a kinyan, why would they need the kinyan and the kiddushin if they're relying on this as a kinyan?
No, there's two different kinyanim. One is whose money, right, the groom's money, the groom, the bride and the groom's parents commit money to the marriage. That has nothing to do with the kiddushin. The kiddushin is the tabad or whatever he's marrying her with. That's the marriage itself. Here we're talking about financial commitments that are given in addition to the marriage, right? That's why the tinaim, they would generally break a plate, the bride's mother and the groom's mother, right? It's like it's an agreement between the parents of the bride and groom about what money they're going to give to the marriage. Nowadays, it's just symbolic. We don't really do anything. But that's different from the kesef of the kiddushin. That's a whole separate thing. That's just the marriage, right, which he's giving her a ring or some value of money. For the kiddushin.
Because they're two separate. In that case, you're saying more.
They're two separate entities. Yes.
And each one is fully.
Yes. They're two totally. No. So that's the issue. This one is not fully valid. You're going to see in a second. Hein hadvarim haniknim ba'amira. This tinaim, because it's linked to the. I would call it like this. It's linked to the marriage. In other words, why are they doing the tinaim? Because ultimately, there's going to be a kiddushin. Right? And that's why whether the ultimately is immediate or not immediate might be, right, there's a relevant machloket there. But what happens, since they're committing money for the marriage of their children, so when the marriage happens, that makes what they agreed on earlier a valid amirah, even without a document that's signed. The assumption here is that they did a document without signing it. Nowadays, by the way, if I remember correctly, at my wedding, I'm pretty sure Adim signed on the tinaim. I think they have Adim Tanaim. Adim signed on the Tanaim. But here they're saying even if they hadn't signed, okay, then it's good. So now they're saying that what? That you can't learn from our Mishnah because our Mishnah is a case of the Shtari Psikta. It's stuff that goes along with the marriage, and therefore it's in a unique category that it doesn't need a kinyan, it doesn't need, because it's kind of linked to the kinyan that ultimately happens. Okay, and it doesn't need edim chatumim. Okay, yeah. Okay. So now Tashma. Now we're going to bring another proof for Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, that one didn't work. We're going to try another one. Katav leKohen. Oh, and by the way, the edim. I think in the end they do have edim that signed, but the edim are signing again. It's a shtar ra'aya. It's like we saw that this happened, not that they wrote a shtar. I'm committing this to you, and I'm committing this to you. It was more a shtar that this happened. Katav leKohen shani chayav lecha chamesh shleim. This is a mishnah in Bechorot. He writes to the kohen, okay, a guy who's chayav in pidyon aben, writes to a kohen that I owe you chamesh shleim. Chayav liten lo chamesh slaim. Okay, he has to give him the chamesh slaim. Ubino eino padoy. But the son is not considered redeemed with this five slaim. Why? Because this shtar is viewed as a shtar chov. Okay, we're going to see soon why exactly the son isn't padoy. So now what do you see here? Again, this is a kind of shtar that he writes, right? But it's not with edim. It's not a valid shtar. And it's considered like it's a valid shtar and he's a bal chov. So they say, Shani Hatam de Mishua Badle Mida Oraita. This is different because in Pidyon Aben, the father, Mida Oraita, is Mishua Bad to give this money, he's Mishua Bad from the Torah to give this money to the Kohen. And therefore, this shtar has more significance. Okay, and therefore, you can't compare it to the guy who says, I'm going to support your daughter for 5 years. So then they say, Ihachi amai katav. So then why did he bother writing a shtar at all? Right? If he was Mishua Bamido, right, to the Kohen, so why did he bother writing a shtar? So they say, kadeh levarer lo Kohen. He wanted to commit to this particular Kohen. He wanted to connect himself with that Kohen and commit to that Kohen. I'm going to give my money to you and not to some other plony Kohen. So then, Ihachi, if that's the case, though, if the whole thing is that he committed this money for the Pidyon HaBen, then the obvious question is, Amayeno Padoy. So why doesn't this work? So they say, Kidu'ula. Damar Ula, Dvar Torah, Padoy Lachishiyitin. Mina Torah, the son is Padoy as soon as he gives money to the Kohen. So it should work. Umay taima amru b'noe no padoy. So why did they say not? Gzera shema yomru podin b'shtaro. They were worried that if he writes this shtar and then he pays up using the shtar, people will get confused and think that you can pay the kohen. Let's say someone owes you 5 sla'im. So you pay the kohen by giving him the IOU of 5 sla'im that someone else will eventually pay him. And you're not allowed to do that. Okay? You can only be poda, you're not allowed to be poda with sharot, you have to be poda with coins. It's probably the reason, by the way, why we don't pay with like bills and stuff nowadays. Because I'm assuming a bill, like a, right, you have to give 5 silver coins, mm-hmm. probably because a bill is considered like a shtar. Mm. Probably, I'm guessing. Again, there's like a bunch of things in today's daf that I think affect our regular halachot. I just can't promise for sure, but it seems to me. It just dawned on me right now. Okay.
Is this general for all Podin or just for this?
Pidyon HaBen specifically.
Just specifically.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. I don't think so. No, I think it's, okay. Yeah. I think it's dafka this. Ein Podin lo bavadin v'lo b'shtarot v'lo b'karkaot. And I, yeah, and they learn it from Psukim in the Psukim there about the Bechor. So I'm assuming it's just that. I can't promise, but I'm assuming. Okay. Amar Rava. Now, so we had a second attempt to prove, but then we said, again, we distinguish between the Pidyon HaBen and our case because it's Meshua Bamidoraita, so you can't compare. Now we have Rava. Rava comes along and says, Kitinai, this machloket is really based on a machloket Tanaim. What's the machloket Tanaim? Arev hayotze achar chitum shtarot, goveh minachasim b'nei chorin. Okay, here's the first opinion. Let's say we have a document of a loan, okay? A loan document, there's edim signed at the bottom, 1 aid, 2 aid, okay? After the edim are signed, meaning it was a done deal, right? The edim signed, now there's no more edim around, comes in a rev and he signs at the bottom. And he says, I will take responsibility for this loan, okay? Now, let's say the malveh comes now, he wants his money back, he goes to the rev. What property can he take from the Arev? How strong is that Arev's signature at the bottom? Since there weren't Edim, again, it's a similar situation. There were no Edim. So, now we're going to see there's a Machloket Tanaim about it. So we're going to say, that must be the exact same Machloket Tanaim. How strong is this shtar that doesn't have Edim? So, the first opinion is, Goveh minachasim b'nei chorin. They can only take it from b'nei chorin. It's not as strong as if there were really Edim there. Okay, and that's what Rabbi Yishmael said. Amar lo ben nanas, eino govet lo minachasim b'nei chorin, v'lo minachasim mishu abadim. Not only can you not take it from nechasim b'nei chorin, not only can you not take it from nechasim mishu abadim, but you can't even take this at all. This is a meaningless document. He signed without edim, it's meaningless. Okay, so now what do you see? Just like Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, right? Rabbi Yochanan said, Chayav ani lecham maneh, right, is patur. And Rabbi Yochanan said, it's chayav. So there you have it. So now, that continues the discussion between them. Rabbi Yishmael says to Ben Nana, Samar lo lama, says, why? Why is this not, you know, why does he have nothing, why can't he be goveh from the Arev? Amar lo, Benana said, Hare shahaya choneget chavero bashuk. Let's say it's like a case where the guy who, the creditor goes to the guy who owes him money and starts strangling him. Okay? Like, give me my money, you're not giving me my money, he starts beating him up. Umitzao chavero, and a third guy's walking on the street and sees this, right? He happens to be the friend of the guy who's getting strangled. Vamar lo, hanach lo vani aten lecha. Leave him alone and I'll give you the money. And what do you think? Is the guy committed to do it? So, patur, shelo alemunato hilveyu. Kilu, he didn't lend the money on his word, right? In other words, he had nothing to do with this, right? So again, what's the situation here? What do you mean? He said, I'll pay you the money. But obviously, he said it just to get him to, you know, prevent him from killing his friend. So he could say, I didn't really mean it, right? So now, what do you see here? When a third guy comes in without any sort of evidence, star, or anything else, right? This Arev just signed at the bottom after. It was lo alamanu tovehu. In other words, when you go to get a mortgage and someone signs as an Arev, right? You don't get the loan until the Arev signs, right? It's not good until the guy comes and signs for you. So here, the guy signed after the loan already happened. Likewise, the guy in the street said, I'll pay, you know, I'll give you the money. He was obviously guaranteeing the loan at a time when the loan had already transpired, and therefore that doesn't count. So that's Ben Nanas' logic. What do you want to ask?
What happens if there was a witness to the guy, to the man who said?
It still doesn't matter. In other words, the point is the loan wasn't taken out with that in mind, and therefore he's just like an outside party. He has nothing to do with this. So now they say, remember, Ben Nanas, Rabbi Yishmael, right? Ben Nanas said he's patur, and Rabbi Yishmael said he's chayav. So, lema Rabbi Yochanan, tamarka Rabbi Yishmael. Just like Rabbi Yochanan said you're chayav, if you say chayav ani lechamaneh, also here you'll be chayav, you know, also here he's chayav, just like Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishlakish, tamarka Ben Nanas. So now they say, no, you don't necessarily have to say this. Aliba de Benanas kule amalo pligi. In other words, it's true. Benanas says you're patur. You'd have to say that works in with this machlokin. But ki pligi aliba de Rabbi Yishmael. But according to Rabbi Yishmael's interpretation, there would Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish could both see themselves in that side. How? Rabbi Yochanan very simply says exactly like Rabbi Yishmael. The Rish Lakish, he would distinguish between the two cases. Why? Ad kan lo kam Rabbi Yishmael hatam. Again, he's going to distinguish. In the case of the loan, there's a shibud mida oraita to pay back the loan. So therefore, right, why is an arev a shibud mida oraita? Because, one second. Right, an arev, right, they claim that an arev, even without a kinyan, is mishabed, is a shibud mida oraita. And therefore, an arev would be a different case than the guy who just says on the street, I owe you 100 shekel. And therefore, Rish Lakish might be able to say, in the case of the arev, you be chayav. In the case of the maneh libe yadcha, you know, or whatever, I owe you 100 shekel, you'd be patur. Okay, gufa. Now we're going to go back to this case of the tinaim. Amar Rav Gidol Amar Rav. Okay, so just to review, we have Rish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan, Chayav Patur. We explain that we're talking about a shtar that doesn't have edim on it, or like a shtar ra'aya, right? That there were no edim on the shtar, on the loan itself, but the kind of said that there was such a, that he said such a thing. And then we have, we tried to bring a proof for Rabbi Yochanan, two proofs, we rejected both of them. Then we tried to say it's a machloket tana'im, we rejected that also. Okay, so we don't really have a context for this machloka like they tried to find, right? It was a way of the Gemara trying to find a context, but they didn't really succeed. Now we're going to talk about this shtari psikta that they explained the Mishnah is talking about. Amar Rav Gidol Amar Rav. Kama tanotein lebincha, kach bekach. Kama tanotein lebincha, kach bekach. Amdu v'kidshu kanu. Hein hein hadvarim haniknim ba'amira. Amar Rava, mistabra milta derav bibito na'ara. It must be that they're talking about when the girl is still in Na'ara. Why? Dikamate hana'a liyade. Aval bogeret de lo mate hana'a liyade lo. It must be that the girl is still in Na'ara. Why? Because the father is getting benefit because the money that goes to him, to her, goes to him. So therefore, it must be that's why we consider this a good kinyan. Then they say, wait, that doesn't make any sense though. Why? Because there's two sides here, right? There's the groom's side and the bride's side. The groom's side, whether she's a ktana or she's not a ktana, or he's a, right? What's the story? He gets the money straight to him, right? There's no thing of his father getting his money. So the Elohim Amar Rav Afilu Bogeret Dilo Temahachi Avi Habein My Hana'a Ataliyade. Right? What's the Hana'a? The assumption here is that because they're getting Hana'a, the Hana'a that they're acquiring causes like a kinyan to happen. You understand? It's like the flip. Because they're getting benefit, it makes it a strong, it's as if there was a kinyan, even though there wasn't a kinyan. Okay? So they buy it with their hana'ah, so to speak. So they say, but both sides have to buy it. And the father of the groom gets no hana'ah because he doesn't get any of the money. So it can't be that that's rotuli, that it must be even a bogeret. So what's the hana'ah that they're buying? This is obvious, right? Anyone who married off children. Ela bahahi hana'ah de kamechatne ahadade gamri umachne lahadade. They're so happy with the fact that their children are getting married to each other that that's the happiness with which they're makne to the other, right, and being kone for themselves, the you know, really not for themselves, they're being makne to their children, right? It's such a happiness that they're happy they're getting married and the other side is giving them money, that they're happy even if it's money for other people. Okay, right, an interesting havamina, that they'd only be happy if the money's going to them, right? At least the conclusion is good, that they're happy for their children and that's considered enough. Okay. And this goes back to all those stories of, you know, the people who wrote all the nechassim to their children, then their children didn't want to give them the money. the complicated times when parents and kids don't necessarily have the perfect relationships. Okay. Amar le Ravina le Rav Ashi. Dvarim halalu nitnu li katev o lo nitnu li katev. Okay, here's an interesting question. Are you allowed to write these things down or not? Okay? By the way, I wanted to just point out, they say, hein hein adverim ha-neknim ba-amira. If you remember, there was this Mishnah we saw about kitvu where they say in the Mishnah, kitvu nechasai or something, if he writes his nechasim, and then someone else, the first line in the Gemara was, even if it's ha-omer, that there's sometimes where amira is as if it was written down. So here you have the same thing, where just them saying it is as if it's written down. It has a certain amount of strength to it. Okay, amale rabina l'rabashi. So dvarim halalu, can you write them down or can you not write them down? Now, what does this mean? Sounds like, right, dvarim shebal peh, are you allowed to write down or not, right? Are you allowed to write these things down? Now, what's the question? Of course you can write things down, right? But what does it mean? If you write them down in a shtar, what will happen? Then you can already, once there's a shtar written, generally we say, you can be goveh minechasim mishu'abadim. Now, what they want to say is, maybe these are things that can never be demanded from the chasim mishu'abadim, and therefore adif not to write them down because it will cause confusion. Okay? So that's the question. Can we write them down or not? Amale, lo nitnu likatev. You cannot write them down, Rav Ashi says. Okay? Because then you'll be ending, you know, you'll create confusion where people will think you can be govern from the chasim mishu'abadim and you can't. So now they say, etive, but wait, we have a question on this from our Mishnah. Hapikhin hayu kotvin, I jumped the gun. This is where we say the ketiva is amira. Okay. So what do we say here? They say adif to do what, right? In our Mishnah, they say you're better off writing this down. What do you mean you're better off writing this down? That's what we just said. You can't write these kinds of things down. Because what did we say? Our Mishnah is like the Shtar Psikta, right? And it can't be written down. So what are the answer? My kotvim, when they say kotvim, they mean omrim. Bekare leila amira ktiva. This is where I messed it up. I meant to say it here. This is where they say the amira is like ktiva, just like we saw earlier where, you know, someone had said on the Mishnah, it really means amira. Okay, so now they say in. Is that really true? Vahatznan hakotev liishto. Oh, I'm sorry, they're going to quote our Mishnah. Okay, so this is their way of, I assume they're proving it from here, right? It seems to be that they're proving it. Right, in isn't a question. In is yes, it's true. Okay, in means came, by the way. So they're saying, yes, you can call a mirak tiva, and they quote after the Mishnah. I didn't remember that was in the text here. So they quote the Mishnah that we read before, Hakotev Lishto Din Adrim Ein Li B'Nechasayich, right? I don't have anything to do with your Nechasim. And Rabbi Chiya said, it doesn't mean Hakotev, it means Ha'omer. Okay? Then when we read it, by the way, we didn't say it's Ha'omer instead of Hakotev. We said it's even if you say Ha'omer. Here the Mishnah is explaining, the Gemara is explaining it more that sometimes kotev doesn't actually mean kotev. It means to say, right? That only to say, not to write, okay? And here they're trying to say they really didn't mean that he should write it down. They meant that he should stipulate in words, okay? Which is somewhat difficult according to the text. Yeah. You have to remember, I want to just stress, our Mishnah said, never said we're talking about a shtar, never said we're talking, right? It seemed like it wasn't a shtar at all. The Gemara explains that we're talking about there was a shtar without edim, okay? And then, you know, and then, like, in general, they're explaining the Mishnah kind of out of, again, as usual, they're kind of saying it's talking about a particular case where there was a shtar without writing, and, You know, if you notice, by the way, all the cases they brought, it wasn't really clear, was there a shtar where they're aiding? The assumption here in all these cases was there was a shtar without aiding. Because the assumption is, if there was a shtar with aiding, it would be obvious, you wouldn't need to say it. But that's kind of where they're going with it. But again, it's things that aren't really written here, and they're interpreting. Okay, Tashma. Now we're going to bring a, right, this is going to be another kushia on Rav Ashi. Ein kotvin shtarei erusin v'nisuin ela midat shnehen. Okay, what does that mean? You can't write a shtar erusin or nisuin unless both of them agree to it. Now, what does it sound like from here? Ha midat shnehen, if it is according to what both of them think, then kotvin, then you can write, right? In which case, what's the Gemara assuming here? My lav shtarei psikta. When they talk about shtarei erusin v'nisuin, right, the number one assumption here is that the first jump you make from this source saying you can't write it unless they both agree sounds like when they both agree to it, you can write it. And then the second assumption is the shtarei erusin and nisuin that they're discussing are these tinaim that we just talked about. And then we have a question on Rav Ashi, because Rav Ashi said you can't write them. And here it seems to imply if both agree to it, then you can write it. So now they're going to say the obvious answer, right? Lo shtarei erusin mamash. No, they're talking about the shtar of erusin. Like, remember, when you write, harei at mekudesh et li, right? Bishtar zeh. Instead of the way we give a ring, right? You could get married bishtar. So you could say that it's talking about shtarei erusin mamash. Kidra papa. And then it goes like Rav Papa's shita. We're going to see in a second. Rav Papa v'Rav Shrevya. Ti itmar, katvu lishma v'shelomi da'ata. Okay, let's say you write a shtar erusin. Okay, I don't know if you know this halacha about lishma. Generally, we talk about it when it comes to a get. A get has to be written lishma. What does that mean? If you find a random get that somebody wrote and never used, and it has your name and your husband's name, you can't reuse it. Okay, you can't have like shtarot written up, you know, randomly laying around. If it wasn't used, and use it. It has to be written lishma. There's also machloket about whether the entire shtar has to be written lishma from start to finish, or just the names have to be written lishma. Okay? But generally, they write a get from start to finish in the name, like they don't leave tfasei gitin, you know, like an empty tofes. Okay, so now there's a machloket. What about kiddushin? Okay? Which is erusin. Right? Can you say, can you use a shtar, kiddushin, shelo lishma, vishalomi da'ata? Okay, so according to the first opinion, Ravi Ravina Amre Mikudeshet. If you, now maybe ideally you shouldn't, but if you did this, and you wrote it, it wasn't lishma, it was written lishma, but it was against her wish, like she didn't know about it. Okay, shalomi data. So Rav Ravina says she's mikudeshet. But Papa Rav Shrevya Amre ain't a mikudeshet. It's no good. Okay, it has to be midata. So that's how they read this source now. Ain't kodvin shtarei erusin v'nisuin ela midat shnehem. It has to be an agreement between both of them. The wife has to be an equal part of it. You can't marry someone with a shtar without her agreement. In which case, what have we done to the source? We've basically taken the source and said it has absolutely nothing to do with our shtar psikta and therefore totally irrelevant. We tried to bring it as a question of Rav Ashi, who said, you can't write these shtarot down, these shtar psikta. And we basically answer, oh, this has nothing to do with shtar psikta. We're talking about erusin, and we're talking specifically about this machloka that we see later in the Amoraim we're arguing about. And this braita goes according to Rav Papa's shita. Again, obviously, it's the flip. Rav Papa agrees with this shita of this braita, which is that she's not mikudeshet if it's not with her dad. Tashma. Okay, now we have another source. So we're going to try to ask a question on Rav Ashi. Meitu benotehem. Okay, you can see they had a lot of trouble with this. He said you can't write these down. I think it was weird to them, this concept that you can't write down a shtar, right? Tashma. Meitu benotehem. I'm sorry, meitu. If both husbands die from our Mishnah, remember? If both husbands are committed to do for the 5 years... So again, there becomes this weird situation where their own daughters, benotehen, nizonot minachasim b'necharin, v'hi nizonet minachasim b'shu'abadim, mipnei shehi kebalat chov. What do you see here? If she can get from nechasim b'shu'abadim, and this shtar is like a sharp psikta, what do you see? The fact that she can get it from nechasim b'shu'abadim must be it was written down, right? That it can be written down, it can be gone from nechasim b'shu'abadim. So what are the answer? Hacha b'mayaskina b'shekanu miyado. If they actually did a kinyan, then yes. But if there wasn't a kinyan, then she couldn't be gova from nechasim b'shu'abadim. So then they say, Ihachi benot nami. Well, then his daughters could also do a kinyan, and then they'd also, this answers your question, Ruth, actually, that there is a way that the daughters can do a kinyan, and then they can get from the chasim mishuabadim. So why would there be a distinction here between his daughters and the other daughters? So the answer, no, the Mishnah is talking about, now this becomes really off the, okay, off the pshat, b'shekanu lezo v'lo kanu lezo. Our Mishnah, when it says that she's in a stronger position than the others, is she's in a stronger position because the father put her in a stronger position. He did a kinyan about the nechasim for the daughters of the wife, but he didn't do a kinyan for his own daughters, which is a strange situation. Why would he do it like that, right? Umay paska. So then the answer. So why would this be the case, right? That he would the really asking is. Is this Davar Pasuku? Is this like such a clear-cut thing that someone generally would do a kinyan for the nechasim that belong to his wife's daughters, but not to the daughters who belong to him? So they answer, yeah, why? Because ihi, and this is what we talked about, dehave b'shak kinyan, mahani le kinyan. But no, delo have b'shak kinyan, lo mahani le kinyan. What's the story? This daughter, at the time he made the agreement, he did a kinyan, and she was around, right? The wife said, I want you to support my daughter who exists right now. But his own daughters didn't exist at the time, right? Because he was only marrying this woman now. And the assumption is they weren't there. Shakin lo mahane le kinyan. Milo as kinyan to have b'shak kinyan. Couldn't you say, though, it's talking about that they were b'shak kinyan? Behechi dami, and how could that be? Kigon digarsha v'ahadra. Maybe he divorced his wife and then he remarried her, in which case there were kids already. Ela'ihi to leita b'tnai beitin mahane le'kinyan. Now they're going to give a different answer. They basically don't like that answer about saying there was a difference between the daughters because he did a kinyan with one and into a kinyan with the other. So they're going to say, Ela'ihi to leita b'tnai beitin mahane le'kinyan. But no, to idnu b'tnai beitin lo mahane le'kinyan. So now they say that the daughters, what's the story? Remember we learned this? In a ketubah, what happens? All the future daughters that are going to be, right, from between them, get mizono. So that's a t'nai beitin. So therefore, there was no need to do a kinyan, because they have a t'nai beitin. Even though, yes, it could be because they could get from nechasim mishuabadim. But what are they saying? So, so one second. Right. So that's how you read. So there's a difference between the ones that were b'tnai beitin. So therefore, kinyan doesn't work for them because it's already such a strong, right? Remember we said, even if you don't write the ketubah, the tanaim of the ketubah, that the daughters get mizonot after his death, are going to get it anyway. So now they say, but that becomes a ridiculous thing because in the end, migregare, they're worse now. It's something that's b'tnai beitin, and so strong, but in the end it's worse because they can't get from nechasim mishuabadim. So what are the answer? Ela b'notav hanu taima kevan deinu b'tnai beitin imor tsrari at pesinu. He already puts money aside, and therefore there's no need, in other words, there's no need to be gova from nechasim mishuabadim because he already puts money aside for this, and therefore there's a sense that there's already these nechasim and there's no need to do a kinyan. Okay, let's go on a little more. Lo yomar harishon. Okay, what's this line? The Rishon can't say, right, I don't want to give the money, right? And therefore, lo yomar Rishon l'chisha tavo etzli azuna, ela he has to be molich mizono to where the mother is. So Amar Rav Chisda, zot omerit, here's the interesting thing, bat etzel ima, right, that the daughter goes with the mother, okay, custody. Mimai de bigdola askinan, dilma bigtana askinan, umishum ma'aseh shahaya. Okay, maybe they're talking about a ktana and not a gdola. So then, they say, second, right, and maybe, we're talking about a ktana, and she goes because of this ma'aseh shaya. What was the ma'aseh shaya? I'm going to find this really horrible. Titania, misha meit v'hineach ben katan le'imo. Okay, they left a small son to the mother. The mother still had this small son. Yorshei ha'av omrim, yehei gadel etzlenu. V'imo omeret, yehei b'ni gadel etzli. Okay, the mother wanted him, right? Custody battle. Menichim et oto etzel imo, ve'em menichim etzel ra'oi liyorsho. You leave him with the mother and not with other people who are splitting the inheritance with him. Why? Maaseh haya b'shachatuhu. Now here's a really interesting thing. Aleph resh hey. Okay? There's different ways of reading this. One is Erev Harishon, and they killed him on the first night. Okay? They killed the Katan immediately. Why? Because they wanted to inherit his portion. Some people say it's Erev HaPesach, and some people say it's Erev Rosh Hashanah. Now, some people say in the earlier text it appears Erev HaPesach, and it was changed. Why was it changed? Because of the...
Blood libels.
Yafeh, right? Mm. So, yeah, isn't that really interesting? So they took it out because of the blood libels, and they changed it to Erev Harishon.
Would they be allowed to inherit if they killed him?
Yeah, maybe there was no proof that they killed him. I mean, they should get killed, but, you know. Yeah, but I guess it's, first of all, now, you know, in those days they weren't killing people anymore, and, you know, no Sanhedrin. Anyway, whatever. So, what do they say? First of all, it could be they wouldn't inherit him anyway, and maybe they thought they could get away with it, and they didn't inherit him. But
in the Harah, that if it was Erev HaPesach, then they would have been tame and they could.
Oh, right. I didn't mention the
and
other
they
two
didn't
things.
Care about
so,
that.
Right.
To get rid
so,
of
to say Erev Rosh Hashanah or Erev Pesach is basically stressing how crazy they were that they didn't care either about Erev Rosh Hashanah Yom HaDin, or as Naomi pointed out, they didn't care about, you know, being tame for Erev Pesach. So, what do you see here? That maybe it's a ketana, and it's because of the maaseh shaya that you have to protect the young ones, but that a gedola wouldn't necessarily go to live with her mother. So what do they say? Im kein litni lemakom shehi, right? My lemakom sheima shmat mina bat etzel em loshna gedola loshna ketana. Because it says go bring it to her at her mother's house, it seems to imply that even a gedola, right? Because if it was a gedola, it would have said go give it to her wherever she's living. Okay, so therefore they say it's even a gedola. Okay, because if you want to stay, anyone who wants to go can go. I just figured I'll read this last story. Lo yomru shnehem. Okay, here's an interesting thing about the money thing. Okay? Whether you can pay the value of the mizonot, right? What do they say here? Instead of giving the mizonot themselves, you give the money for it because she doesn't need the mizonot. So here's an interesting story. Hahu gavra de ogre le rechaya lechavre litchina. He rented out his rechaim to someone. And the guy borrowed the rechaim, and he, in payment for the rental, he would grind the guy's wheat, okay? His tfuah. So basically, this is the deal, right? He gets the rechaim to borrow, and in exchange, the payment is the wheat that's ground. Lisof i'atir, the guy whose wheat gets ground for him, eventually gets rich. Zavin rechaim v'chamor, see, he buys a new set of rechaim for himself to have, and he buys a chamor to help with the chamor would do the work of the grinding. Amar le, av ha'ivna havi tachina gabech. Hashta havli agra. Until now, you were doing my grinding, now I could do it myself. Give me the money for the rental instead of instead of giving me the ground wheat. I can grind my own wheat. Amar le, mitchan tachina nalach. I'm going to still grind for you. That was our deal. I don't owe you any money. So now, do we say that it's like when the girl doesn't need mizonot anymore, you give her the money for the mizonot? Or do you say it's not the same? So, Saba Rabina Lameimar, Haino Matzitin. He said, oh, this is just like our Mishnah. Lo yomru shnehem, hare anu zanimota ke'echad. Ela, echad zanav, echad noten la deme mizonot. Okay? So Amar le Rav Avira, but Rav Avira said, no. Right? Again, this was Savar, right? Whenever you see Savar, it's always going to be rejected. Rav Avira says, mi dame. Hatam chad kresa itla. Chad kresa itla. She only has one stomach, right? She doesn't have two stomachs. You can't give her double the amount of food. What's she going to do with it? Tarte kresa ta leitla, right? She doesn't have two stomachs. Hacha, but in this case, matse Amar le, tchom bizavin, tchom v'otiv. It's true you have your own grinder now, so you grind your wheat and go sell it. And I, who had an agreement with you that I'm giving you ground wheat, I'm going to keep grinding your wheat and I'm going to give it to you. Velo amaran ela delei leitchina lerechaya. Aval it leitchina lerechaya kegon zo kofin oto al midat stone. But that, they say, is only in the case where this guy doesn't have, where he doesn't have other work to do. In other words, if he can sell he grinds all day the wheat, he wants to pay the guy with ground wheat, with flour. If he can sell what he's grinding and then give the money, to the original owner, then he has to do that. Then kofino tal midat stom, they say. They say to basically insist, when you have a way, any way you're making it, right? And if you have a way to sell that to people and force that guy, you know, in other words, and give him instead of selling yourself and making him sell, that's called midat stom. That's already not appropriate. So basically, if the guy has who to sell to, that he has to sell it, and then he pays the guy he was renting from the actual money, because that's what the guy wants. But if he doesn't have anyone to sell to, then he can continue his deal of what he committed in the first place. And it's different from the other case, because in the end, he's not causing the guy a loss, because that guy will sell it. Now, obviously, it doesn't relate to what if the second guy can't sell it. And obviously, it's a big tircha for the guy to have to sell, you know. But the point is that in the end, he's not... It's not like mizonot, the girl's not going to go sell her mizonot. Like here, we're talking about a product that he can go sell, and therefore he's not causing him a loss of money. Whereas with the girl, it would be a loss of money. Okay. However, you know, there's a bit of a question here why, you know, why he has to be the onus of selling is on him. But I guess because that's the way they made the deal in the first place. You know, he should have, again, he should have been smarter and made the deal. You'll pay me in wheat, you know, in flour, so long as I need flour, you know. And then just like in our Mishnah, where if you had stipulated, you would have been more protected. Okay.